Podcast, a weekly discussion of current affairs in China, coming to you from the pop-up Chinese studios in Beijing. I'm your host, Kaiser Guo. Today, for the first show of 2012, we predictably look back at the year just past. Joining me to chat about China in 2011 is my Seneca co-conspirator, Jeremy Goldcorn, the man behind Danway.com. How are you, Jeremy?
Very well. Good evening, Kaiser.
I am going to hand off to you, Jeremy, and let you take the calm as lead interrogator, because you've been engrossed in year-end list-making and that sort of activity, right? So, anyway, soon we'll hand over to Jeremy. Also with us today is Will Moss, the blogger behind ImageThief.com. How are you, Will? Good to see you.
Hey, Kaiser. Nice to be back.
You are looking very much like Vladimir Ilyich Lenin.
It's a thematic thing. I intend to go through all of the old communists one by one. Trotsky will be next.
Marx will take a while, the beard and the belly. Also with us is, of course, for anyone who reads the Wall Street Journal's excellent real-time blog, familiar voice, Josh Chin. Good. Welcome back to Seneca, Josh.
Thank you, guys.
It's been a very event-packed year. We learned all sorts of new words, right? Like clenbuterol and PX, which I will forever think of as the burly chemical after Josh's appearance on the show. Thanks, Josh. We've learned about the effects of radioactivity on the thyroid and how silly it is to hoard salt. And we've learned all about signaling systems on high-speed rail lines. We've learned about the fragility of Chinese school buses. And lots of an interesting year. I'm just going to start with one question before I hand off. What was this year, the year of blank, 2011? Anyone got a thought?
For me, the year of the high-speed train crash.
Okay. Will?
Yeah. I agree with that. I'm not going to argue with that.
So the story of the year was the high-speed train crash.
Well, I think if you mentioned the high-speed train crash, I think if you go one step up, I'd say the year of Weibo.
That's what I'm going with. I'm going with the year of Weibo.
They're inextricable, those two things.
Right. I mean, Weibo, the train crash was sort of the first proof case for the power of Weibo.
For Weibo, both being a significant social force and also something that is an object kind of fascination to the media.
Yeah, I mean, it's no longer apparently legal to actually go out and do Vox Pop if you're a reporter in China. You can just jump on Weibo and say, oh, let's see what they have to say there. Yeah, so I mean, what are the other possible candidates for 2011, year of the train crash, year of Weibo, year of real estate price deflation, year of...
I mean, in Beijing, you could say this is the year when air pollution became a real talking point among Chinese people.
Okay.
When fog finally officially turned to smog.
That's right.
By popular demand.
Right.
But we're all in agreement that Wenzhou, the train wreck, was the biggest city. Didn't you guys do a poll?
We did. We did indeed do a poll. Wenzhou finished top five stories with 40% of the vote.
What were the other contenders you wrote?
Number two was Wuhan.
Ah, right. That happened too close to the end of the year, though.
I think that maybe had a little bit of
sort of like the Oscars, you know, like the big stories come out in December.
Exactly. Wuhan, they timed their protest for maximum impact on end of year surveys. And then, surprisingly, given the amount of media coverage, you got Ai Weiwei finished last, only 5% of the votes.
It does depend, I think, on, you know, if you're talking about within China or outside of China. I mean, if you're talking about global media coverage of China, Ai Weiwei was a huge story. Obviously, if you're talking about inside China, it's barely a story at all.
Well, exactly. And we set up the survey on China Real Time with that. You know, the criteria was it had to have had an impact inside China as well as attracting attention outside. So I think maybe that's why Mr. Ai did not finish so well.
Let's get going with a look at Xinhua's list of the top news stories of 2011. So, you know, this should be the mouth and the tongue of the party speaking here. So Xinhua's top 10 news domestically. Number one, China launched a series of tough government measures to cool off the property market. So Xinhua, they put that at the top of the list.
Interesting.
What do you think of that?
Whether or not it deserves to be at the top, I think it deserves to be on there. Maybe not the efforts that were made so much as the consequences deserve to be on top. And I think those are going to be shaken out for a while still.
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously an important thing. I mean, the real estate market is something that everyone is invested in either, you know, quite literally, or you know, they're waiting for property prices to come down so they can realize that new Chinese dream.
Like, or even just get married. I mean, that's right. That's I think the striking thing in China versus the U.S. I mean, how many in the U.S. you really start thinking about buying a house if you're kind of an average person until you're maybe late 20s, early 30s. But in China, it's
that's insane.
We still never have. I keep waiting for my wife to leave. Right.
It's clearly insane. It's clearly ridiculous that there's any expectation that a recent college graduate in a major metropolitan, I mean, a big city, a world capital, could expect realistically to own real estate.
And this is in a place where 15 years ago, privately owned apartments and houses were literally not unheard of, but almost unheard of. I mean, the concept didn't really exist for most people.
15 years ago, you needed a bicycle, a wristwatch, a sewing machine, they counted your wealth in legs, right? If you had like this many legs, that meant you had a table and a dining room set or whatever.
So great if it becomes easier particularly for hard-up young men to meet the criteria for marriage here, because, you know, heaven knows we want them all to be happy. But there's another side to that now, isn't there, with the people who've already bought property, many of whom are going to get creamed as a result.
That's right. That's why I'm saying everyone's got a dog in this fight.
Let's move on to the next Xinhua domestic news story. More than 90 central government departments publicized their 2010 and 2011 spending on government-funded overseas travel, receptions, and official cars. This has been quite a lot talked about in the Chinese media and is usually shortened as the San Gong, you know, Gong as in Gongquan, like public money, basically. So it's a campaign to stop the abuse of public funds.
Right, it's transparency. I mean, this is one of these stories that I think that the Western media just has given kind of short shrift to. I mean, it's really interesting, I mean, as we're doing this, to see what the Western media has been covering versus what really peaks in China, if we can take Xinhua as a barometer.
No, I agree. I mean, I think Xinhua, at least so far, they've one and two are pretty big stories. I mean, we just had a story of the Shenzhen party chief complaining that corruption had driven up the price of Mao Tai.
right.
You know, I mean, but no, this is a huge issue. I mean, people, you go online, people are talking about government spending, and I mean, if the government could actually force a reasonable number of departments to disclose what they're spending money on, that would be a huge victory for transparency here.
There has been also just an interesting sort of little part of this story in the last month or so. There's been quite a lot of attention on the internet, and some of it has got to the Western, the English language media, on army and Wujing People's Armed Police cars, you know, very expensive cars, Audis and BMWs that are being bought by the police and the army. And I think that's one aspect of it, that it's not included in the government departments that are publicizing their spending on travel and cars and everything, because it's the army and the police, and they can do whatever the fuck they want, basically. So
the question is, does anybody on the amongst the Chinese commentariat think that the transparency is helping or going to help at all?
I think any step helps. I don't think that, I mean, I'm not holding my breath and imagining that corruption is going to
happen. We're headed for immediate clean government nationwide.
We'll be Singapore tomorrow. No, of course not. But obviously, it's a step in a good direction. But, you know, again, we saw the closure of these sub-provincial or sub-municipal representative offices in Beijing. That was, I guess, in 2009 and early 2010. What effect has there been of that?
It's hard not to be cynical. Let's move on to the next story, which is China's amended criminal law criminalized all drunk driving incidents starting May 1, 2011. The previous law imposed criminal penalties on drunk drivers only when they caused serious traffic accidents. So this is a real thing. And I mean, you in China, it's not like other countries where there's a limit. You can, in fact, be done if you've had anything to drink at all.
There's no blood alcohol limit. I think there actually is, but it's a really low threshold.
And they have a I don't think you get a criminal penalty for it, but they have an infraction called jiuhou jiachou. That just means you've had a drink. It doesn't mean you've had...
Which I think they officially translate as drink driving instead of
drunk driving. So I don't know if there's too much to say about that.
No, there is. I mean, I think this has had a profound impact on my life, where I am no longer – I can always just sort of shake a set of keys at people at those interminable banquets and be completely exonerated from having to drink sorghum liquor. I mean, and everyone else does it too. I mean, I think that we're going to see a decided diminution of that that horror that we've all had to endure.
Certainly in Beijing, I think, you know, it's no longer de rigueur at a banquet to get smashed.
Anything at all that improves traffic safety, even a little bit, is welcome. As always, the devil is in the enforcement. There's plenty of well-intentioned traffic laws here.
So you're not going to get killed by a drunk driver, but you probably will get killed by something you ate. The next item on Xinhua's list is food safety scandals erupted in a great number in 2011. Authorities busted farmers for adding clenbuterol, a known carcinogen, to pig feed in order to grow leaner pigs.
You'd think that would be the whole category would be the perennial number one at this point.
Baidu, in fact, Kaiser's employer released a list of top 10 food safety issues of 2011 based on, Kaiser, can you tell us anything about how the list was created?
Sure, it's simply based on frequency of searches. And, you know, clenbuterol, of course, is on there, but so is, you know, digoyo, you know, gutter oil.
Gutter oil, which is oil that's recycled from the refuse of restaurants.
That's right. All the ones that you've heard
exploding
of.
Exploding watermelons, dyed, exactly. Steamed buns.
Aflatoxin in milk.
No, actually, that one didn't make it on because it was, again, too close to the end of the year. It missed the Oscar cutoff, I think. It was just because we measure
it. We'll look for it on this year's list.
We measure it in you know, total frequency of searches. The sheer number of searches. So something that happened early in the year, even with its long tail, is more apt to make it toward the top.
I think, I mean, my gut instinct is the clenbuterol, which in Chinese is shou rou jing, which is, you know, lean meat essence, I think is the one that sort of, in terms of people's sentiment on the internet, was the one that hit hardest.
Sure.
Well, I mean, there's one thing you don't mess with in China. It's people's pork.
That's So
next on Xinhua's list was, in a speech delivered on July the 1st.
Are we really going to do this? Okay. Go
ahead. Okay. Hu Jintao's speech on July the 1st, stressing the party's, hailing the party's achievement and stressing efforts for future development. So that's a non-story.
So there's that.
Next item on Xinhua's list is the July 23rd high-speed train crash near Wenzhou. So, Xinhua has recognized the importance of that incident.
Right. We could just refer listeners to that, I think, you know, pretty darn good podcast that we did all about the train crash. And what else is there to say? I mean, I think the follow-up, of course, is that 53 people have actually been punished as a result. Was it 50? Am I remembering that number right? It was 50-some-odd, 53, 56 people were actually punished in connection with this. But still, I think there were a lot of people baying for blood. They don't think that the sentences were harsh enough. They don't feel like the actual cause was really made absolutely transparent.
Well, that report only came out very, very recently.
Like
3 weeks ago. Reawakened the issue a bit.
Right. But that's...
I mean, it is a tough one because I think it's quite well known in China that the Ministry of Railways is extremely corrupt, and it's you know, right now what's going on is there's a mini scandal because they've introduced an online ticketing system which is supposed to, you know, improve the ease of buying tickets for the Chunyun going home for Spring Festival, and like there's some Nongmin now complaining that it discriminates against migrant workers because they can't use the internet and. Certainly people are still having the same problems they've always had buying tickets.
Right.
I'm curious what you guys think about the metaphorical impact of the train crash. I mean, I think there was some line that came out. I don't think anyone ever figured out who wrote it, but it was spreading all over the internet that, you know, we are all passengers on a high-speed train hurtling through a lightning storm. I mean...
Well, I think it was symbolically very important. We talked about this a little bit in our show that was dedicated to the train crash, but at a basic level, it was a very high-profile project for the party. The accident was shortly after the 90th anniversary speech, just about 3 weeks later, and I think it was tailor-made to be adopted as a metaphor and that people see it as representative of a lot of the problems here, the transparency of government, the quality of infrastructure, and many other things.
No, I mean, it's a perfect... It was the embodiment of the hubris, of the technocratic hubris of the party.
I think that's part of the reason why it became as volatile an issue as it did online. That was a big part of its power and its staying power amongst the public.
Fast 6 months later now, though, what's real... I mean, is it... has it had that kind of staying power?
Who knows? I don't think they've yet released the report they were supposed to have released in September. There was a news story, I guess, about a month ago about a new attempt to set a high-speed train record, 500 kilometers per hour or something.
They did release the report, didn't they? But there was criticism as to the level of detail in it.
That's right.
And sort of how upfront they were being about, you know, where the problems were. But it didn't lead to another enormous storm. It sort of came and went.
Next item on the list, Jeremy.
The next item on the list was the launch and safe return of Shenzhou 8 unmanned spacecraft, marking the completion of China's first space docking mission. So this is basically a lead up to China having a space station. And this is important both, I think, as a part of Chinese national pride, but also as something that contributes to the ongoing decline of America debate in the United States, because you see this kind of Sputnik talk where, you know, look at these cunning communists are now the people most active
right.
in space.
We're reduced to buying tickets on Russian rockets now.
It's the same year that the space shuttle, you know, flew its final mission, right? So there's something poignant about that.
Well, having said that, I wonder how much impact, I mean, I wasn't paying attention. I was in China, I guess we all were, but how much impact that had in the U.S.? I mean, after all the talk about Sputnik moments.
My sense wasn't that,
not
well,
much.
That it didn't play much.
Right? I don't think the Chinese space program is going to make a huge difference until they plant somebody on the moon. Then you'll see Americans have a conniption fit.
Right.
And you know what is going to happen is you're going to have all these like Shanxi Nongmin with like little yellow space helmets like mining the moon. There's going to be a colony of 30,000 people digging up whatever they can find there.
Let's not even get into the lunar mine safety scandals.
Okay, next on the list.
Remember, gravity isn't as...
next on the list, a gathering was held on October 9 to commemorate the 100th anniversary of China's 1911 revolution, which is called the Xinhai Revolution, marking the end of 2,000 years of imperial rule by toppling the Qing dynasty.
Right, and I thought, despite its appearing on this list, it was really pretty low key in China.
Completely low key. It was almost airbrushed out of existence. Because the implications of really talking about the Xinhai Revolution, I think, are raise too many sensitive topics.
Well, or so we imagine anyway. I'm not sure that all Chinese people see it that way or that many. I mean, I've tried to sort of make that suggestion while talking to some of my Chinese friends, and they've looked at me. It's left them pretty cold. They're like, really? No, I mean, I never really think of it that way.
What is the explanation then for why it was so quiet? I mean, this is a country that loves
its anniversaries.
And hundreds of
and that has, you know, not been shy about, for instance, venerating Sun Yat-sen in recent years.
No, not shy at all. A mystery. Jeremy, do you have an opinion on this?
I think that the 1911 revolution is de-emphasized in history textbooks and in propaganda with a purpose. So when Chinese people say, oh, I've never thought of it that way, yeah, sure, because it's one of those huge, huge, absolutely vitally important incidents of the 20th century in China that just doesn't get talked about generally much here. And I think there's some design behind that.
Sure.
It's old and people don't give a shit. I mean, but about something that happened 100 years ago.
Would you care to speculate on what that design might be?
Well,
we did a whole show on this, so we can just refer people to that. Right.
And I would also recommend the China Heritage Quarterly, which, full disclosure, is a product of the Center on China and the World at Australian National University, of whom Danway is an affiliate. But there's quite a lot of stuff about the Xinhai Revolution on ChinaHeritageQuarterly.org.
Right, right.
Okay. Next on the list, the 17th Central Committee of the Communist Party of China concluded its sixth plenary session in October. And this was where Hu Jintao gave the speech about culture and soft power, etc., that was again republished in a slightly different version in the party journal Seeking Truth.
Right.
And caused some excitement amongst the Western media because of remarks in it about the dangers of, you know, foreign powers
right,
intervening in China and
the creeping
do
westernization
things,
of
creeping
China,
westernization. Right. But I don't think that was actually the main point of his
Yeah, I think a lot of us passed around this article from The Atlantic by Damian Mott, right, which I think sort of fingers and noses and whatnot. It's perfect.
But what certainly is clear is that the media and culture and internet spaces are not going to be any less censored in the next year.
No, and I think one of the interesting stories of the past year is the effort that's been put into less the international soft power and more the domestic culture, not just the internet, but also television and what's happened to television
That's right.
in the course of this year, and the attempts to kind of sanitize it.
Right, when we have SARF really dramas. Flexing its muscle this year. I mean, its ban on the repeat advertising, and of course this whole huge crackdown on entertainment, on sort of vulgar entertainment television.
Making Chinese television more watchable every passing day.
So the final item on Xinhua's list of top China stories, ethics and morality were heavily discussed in the public sphere. And then they mentioned two incidents that weren't really as discussed as another one. In July, a woman in Hangzhou caught a two-year-old girl who plunged from the window of a 10th-floor apartment, winning praise from people across the country.
Yeah, that really did spike, though. I mean, people really did talk about that. I mean, Weibo lit up with that one.
Yeah, but there's a clear omission in that entry, nevertheless.
The other incident they cite is in late August, a bus driver in East China's Jiangsu province stopped to save an old woman who was hit by a three-wheeled vehicle, only to find himself held accountable for the incident. Now, right. What they don't mention in the story what is some of the other lists we've looked at is Yue.
Yeah, Xiao Yue is. I mean, that's the obvious omission here. But I mean, I think nobody could read that. I'm sure nobody would have been able to read it in the original Chinese without thinking about Xiao Yue, who, of course, is the two-year-old in Guangdong. What city was it in Guangzhou itself?
Foshan.
Who wandered out into a street and was hit by not one but two passing vehicles, and multiple people walked by without lifting a finger to help the poor thing.
So, I mean, this is a good transition to some of the other lists. So Yuyu made it onto Sina Weibo's top 10 list of new words and phrases of 2011, soul-searching after the Yuyu incident.
Sure.
Exactly.
And speaking of children, I mean, that was another sort of morality-related thing this year when Yu Jianrong started his Weibo-related campaign about children who had been kidnapped and sort of impressed into a mendicant life.
And Weibo put that as number four on their list of top items.
Very cool, very cool.
They had the soul-searching after Yuyu incident as number seven. Number one was the Wenzhou train crash.
And Li Na winning the French Grand
Prix. Li Na winning the French Open was number two.
The Japan earthquake.
And sorry, the anti-child trafficking campaign was number three. Did I say that before? It was number three. Then the Japan earthquake on Sina's list. Then the Gourmeme incident.
Right. That maybe bears some retelling.
Josh, could you...
Right. So Gourmeme was the... was a... a woman who,
very early 20s, very young.
A very young woman, exactly, who was discovered posting photos of herself posing with BMWs. I can't remember what the models.
All sorts of,
incredibly expensive cars and luxury clothing accessories and sort of flaunting her wealth. Which isn't necessarily unusual.
Unfortunately, it's not. Right.
But the catch came when she claimed to work for an organization that was a commercial affiliate of the Chinese Red Cross.
Right. It's a company that sold advertising on ambulances, which is something that seems to be kind of a strange thing to begin with.
Right, exactly. And this sort of blew up. This coming not too long after the Sichuan earthquake, when the Red Cross was basically the organization that was designated to sort of accept the hundreds of millions of dollars. I think it was hundreds of millions. But
and unfortunately, it happened before, shortly before Wenzhou, and when there was an incredible need for blood, and there were people who just simply were not doing, they were finding there were shortages, and a lot of people attributed this to Gourmeme having kind of single-handedly reduced donations.
It blew a hole in philanthropy here, at least for a while, organized philanthropy. And I always thought what was interesting about that case was how ready people were to believe the worst of the Red Cross very, very quickly.
when in fact the connection was turned out to be fairly tenuous in the end.
I mean, yeah.
But I think that, you know, it comes after a number of, you know, smaller and larger scandals to do with the Red Cross and philanthropy. But the Red Cross has been named a number of times in misuse of funds intended for philanthropic purposes.
2011, year of cynicism.
Yeah.
Right. I'm seriously,
what's 2012?
Though.
It is a year of cynicism. Red Cross's reputation, Chinese Red Cross, is tainted now very badly.
Right. Tainted blood. It's really not so much that there isn't a reason for people to be cynical, but I think it needs to be said that Weibo is sort of this magnifier of cynicism. I mean, it has this effect. It really seems to. I mean, it's built into the game mechanics of it. If you're not cranky and kind of dissatisfied, you're not going to get enough. I mean, you're not going to get as many followers. The more strident you are, the more followers you pick up.
Could be that the government is right about the internet.
It's out of control. Yeah.
That's what I'm really saying.
I think, I mean, that's enough of the interesting things on Sina's list. Let's look at Hudong Baiko, which is a kind of a Wikipedia type of website in China.
The other one. Right.
The other one. Of course, Baidu has a similar product, but Hudong has got its own. They actually organized an event together with the People's Daily Public Opinion Survey Office, Language and Culture Press, and Tencent. They came together and organized an event to decide the words of 2011. And they chose as their top word for 2011 the word xian, as in restriction or limit. And they said they chose this word because in 2011, foreign countries had to restrict their government spending and restrict greenhouse gas emissions, etc. While in China, there were restrictions on apartment purchasing, restrictions on car use, restrictions on broadcast of entertainment shows on TV, etc. And the organizers also said, resources are always limited. Humanity must come to a new understanding of limits, blah, 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 blah. So limit, that's their word. And that was a little bit similar to the National Language Resource Monitoring and Research Center, top character of 2011, which was circulated a little bit more widely outside of China. Kong, as in Kongzhe, or like Weibo Kong, in other words, an obsessive compulsive tweeter on Weibo. Right. The next phrase on Hudong's list was hold Zhu, which is the most disgusting Chinese phrase in my mind of 2011. Does anyone want to?
Actually, I don't even know. I was hoping you might explain the etymology of hold Zhu.
I'll do it if nobody else wants to.
Please.
Well, it comes from a Taiwan talent show. Somebody said, I mean, it's just sort of, you know, hold on. It's like, you know, or keep hold of. I mean,
she said originally that her performance or something would hold Zhu. Yeah. The whole audience. In other words, retain the attention of the whole audience. But I think what's interesting about it linguistically is the hold is being interpreted by Chinese people with as much flexibility as the English word hold.
Right.
So people are using it, you know, to mean retain something, attention, to any pretty much any use of the word
to
hold.
To hang in there, baby.
Hang in there.
Right. Yeah. Lame.
And unfortunate.
What can you do?
Coinage, at any rate.
Number two on Hudong Baiko's list.
I think that the Nao Tai Tao is just so much funnier. I mean,
number two on the Hudong Baiko's list is Steve Jobs. And this obviously was also on many other lists.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's not talk about Steve Jobs. Then they had the high-speed rail crash. Then they had Digoyo, so the gutter oil.
Mm-hmm.
Then they had school bus.
Yes.
Speaking of placing children in jeopardy.
Exactly.
Yes. So
the other
Josh,
child
you covered this, didn't you, on China Real Time Report?
We did. I mean, this was I think the whole thing started off with a crash of a school bus in Gansu. Was that if I remember correctly? There was basically one of these small vans, probably designed, I think it was for 9 people, and it turned out to have something like 60 kids.
62 children were on board and 2 adults.
Right.
Two adults and 19 children died.
Exactly. And, you know, this is one of these things, again, don't mess with children. I mean, the interesting thing about this is sort of horrible car accidents happen in China sort of on a very regular basis. And if you watch the news wires, there's this kind of constant flow on Xinhua of, you know, 30 people died in this accident, 20 people died in this accident. But for some reason, this story really captured the attention of the country, and then there were a series of bus accidents following that.
And then one of the other things that sort of added gasoline onto the fire was that shortly afterwards, the Chinese government announced that it would donate 23 very nice-looking school buses to Macedonia, and people were saying,
as opposed
well,
to
why
say it again, too.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, I mean, I think the, you know, interesting thing with that was there were, I mean, this is partly, there's a backstory to this in terms of education reform. I mean, the reason a lot of these kids are on these buses, sort of traveling these great distances and being jammed in like sardines, is that China is trying to sort of standardize education. So they've been slow, they've been shutting down schools in villages. Which is a sort of untold story in China. I think there's a lot of rural families that have been struggling with this, and this has been something that's caused a lot of angst that hasn't mm-hmm. really gotten a lot of attention. But
visualize it. It's like 62 children in a Jinbei van or whatever it was.
It's a little bigger than that, but yeah, but it's sort
a 9-seater. Can't be that big.
It's one of those Zhongba, I guess.
I'm imagining. I've seen pictures of the thing. The thing that really sealed it on Weibo for a lot of people is that they compared a comparable bus accident, actually, you know, a bus being hit by a much larger vehicle at a higher speed, an American school bus that hardly had any damage at all.
Right. Well, there were photos circulating on Weibo of American buses in accidents where the whatever unfortunate vehicle had collided with the American school bus was completely destroyed,
smashed,
and the school bus had a couple scratches on it.
However, we still can't launch a rocket, so they can console themselves with that.
The next item on Hudong Baikal's list was Gourmet Mei scandal, so the Chinese Red Cross. Then there was the word shangbuqi, which is a Chinese internet slang that I don't fully understand how to use properly.
Yeah, let's not get into too much of the internet slang. That stuff is pretty inside baseball.
It's inside baseball. Okay. Next one was PM 2.5, that phrase.
Big one.
Yeah. That's a big
what's
one.
That about?
Right, of course. I mean, PM 2.5 is 2.5, was it?
Microns
is the threshold below which the Chinese or the U.S. System of measuring air quality, the AQI, it does take 2.5 or above. Is that correct? 2.5 microns or above.
Well, okay, so two kinds of particles that are referred to in air pollution, 10 micron and 2.5, right?
Right.
10 micron, you can see, makes the air look city, but 2.5 are the ones that are really dangerous because really they sink into your tissues and they cause inflammatory reactions.
And the U.S. Embassy's equipment actually measures 2.5
right.
microns,
their
whereas
famous
China
Twitter feed at Beijing Air measures 2.5, which is not officially published here yet.
But it will be now.
Apparently so.
That's good news. Right. Which might be
one of the bigger Weibo stories of the year.
Another example, I think, of popular
pressure from Chinese citizens producing hopefully a positive change. If they can't fix the air, at least people can get some better data on it and make decisions accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Skipping some of these things like the death of Bin Laden and.
There's a bunch of stuff internet slang and on all of these lists. One piece of internet slang I think it is worth mentioning, again, relates to the Wenzhou train crash, which was on Sina's not list of top stories, but top internet slang or internet memes. So the Ministry of Railways spokesman Wang Yongping, who explaining why some carriages were being buried immediately after the crash without apparently being investigated properly, says that he believed the explanation from the people who were doing it. And he said, whether you believe it or not, I believe it.
And we'll be teaching that in classes on what not to do in PR for a long time.
The other piece of internet slang that I thought was really terrific was Yipan. The new unit of measurement that means, I mean, it's an invented one. It shows the genius of Chinese internet users. That means 1,000 yuan per square meter. Pan Shiyi, who, of course, is along with his wife Zhang Xin, the head of Soho, which is a gigantic real estate developer centered here in Beijing, he had written a Weibo post right after Steve Jobs died saying that Apple should have manufactured an iPad or an iPhone 4 for under 1,000 yuan so that more Chinese could have it. And then immediately he was just, you know, slammed with people saying, well, you know, you really ought to build a development that offers 1,000 yuan per square meter housing. And he deleted his post right away. I'm sure he was very, very embarrassed about it. But not before he created this new unit of measure.
Well, the good news is if the property market keeps going down, they may hit it.
A long way.
I think it bears noting that Pan Shi was also one of the people who spearheaded the Weibo PM 2.5 campaign.
This is true.
Deserves some credit for that.
So changing tack here, what do you think the Chinese news stories that the Western press possibly overlooked, the foreign press corps didn't pay significant attention to, that were in fact very widely covered in China and of great concern to Chinese citizens? Jeremy, you have some ideas on that?
Well, I actually think the Western press did a fairly good job of covering issues that were covered in the Chinese media, the ones that were of most interest to Chinese people. I mean, the lists we've gone through in part are all drawn from Chinese media sources and concern Chinese media, domestic media. And they are not that different from even the evil Wall Street Journal representative of Western media's own year-end lists and the stuff that was on China Real-Time Report and in many other Western media organizations. So I don't actually think the Western media did a bad job. I think part of the thanks for this is, in fact, Weibo and other, you know, the general ease of access to the Chinese internet now. I don't know. Do you agree?
I do agree. I think that there were stories maybe that the Western media paid attention to that weren't of tremendous concern, but possibly that's the result of those stories having been kept out of the news deliberately.
And that is a slightly different question. I mean, sure. I think that's a question of what did the Western media hype that wasn't covered in the Chinese media, or what did the Western media have an agenda-driven reporting?
Was there anything that was unfairly hyped, do you think?
Well, there are a number of... I mean, I think there were probably things that were unfairly hyped. I'm not quite sure. I think a lot of them were not covered in China because they weren't allowed to be covered in China. Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably fair to say in some of those cases, I think there might be a feeling within the Western media that if it's not being covered in China, it needs to be excessively covered in Western media to compensate for that. But
Excluding things that were kept out of the media, maybe, and it sort of remains to be seen how this plays out this year, but maybe the China bear stuff, which you guys talked about on the show some weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, there are people with bearish sentiment in China, and they make their voices heard every time they sell off huge stakes on the A-share market. But,
I mean, look, I think what one could sum up is that... The links between the Western media and the Chinese media, because of the internet, are much closer.
Absolutely.
And it's much, I mean, the old days are gone when there was a story in English that didn't appear at all in Chinese and or vice versa. Mm-hmm. You know, even the stuff that didn't appear in Chinese news sources was appearing on the internet. So, you know, whether it's Ai Weiwei or any other sensitive issue, stuff that Western media covered was being circulated in China. That's and right. Vice versa, pretty much.
Has 2011 been an easier year to do your job because of Weibo? I think that's a fair statement
of being totally honest. I mean, speaking just for myself, I have to say doing Vox Pop interviews going
tiring.
Out on the street, I sort of loathed that assignment.
You were always the guy they sent out to do that, huh?
Exactly. Yeah. So now I get to do it from the comfort of my own office. But I mean, that's not really. I mean, the comfort isn't really the issue so much as, I mean, as much as Western media gets criticized for cherry picking quotes from Weibo and other parts of the internet, I still think you get a much broader range of Chinese responses that way than you would if you walk outside your office in the CBD in Beijing, where you're pretty much only going to be running into
white collar types
or destitute migrant workers. Right. You know, so I think in that way, I think Weibo is actually a really, really interesting issue this year in terms of Western coverage, because it was Western media always was one of my favorite moments was Western media was getting criticized in part for sort of exploiting Weibo for their own purposes and taking it as a voice of the people. And then I think, I can't remember exactly when this was, but sometime in the middle of the year, you had the People's Daily come out with an essay saying that, yes, in fact,
Weibo was the voice of the people and that the Chinese government should be listening to people on Weibo as well.
Apparently, so. To some degree, it is. Although at the same time, of course, also real name registration is coming in for Weibo. And,
yeah, we haven't talked about that, but let's actually move on. I know, Josh, you need to go to a meeting, so let's move on with our recommendations for the week. Josh, do you want to start?
Speaking of Weibo, and this might, I'm not sure how new this is, but it's something I just recently discovered, and it's a website published by the Journalism and Media Studies Center at Hong Kong University, which...
Oh, God damn it, you're about to scoop my recommendation, but that's okay. Please go ahead.
It's Weibo Scope. Is that, did I scoop
you? No, that's correct, Weibo Scope. You did scoop.
Do you know when they started doing
it? I don't. It was actually very recent. I think it was just a couple of weeks ago. It was down recently for a little bit, but I think it's working again.
Right. But anyway, I mean, I think it's this fantastic website that basically, when you open it up, the homepage shows a mosaic of photos, which are the most popular or most frequently reposted photos and images on Weibo, and they rank them, which is kind of an interesting way to look at what's going on. I mean, you sort of inevitably you get a sort of disproportionately large number of photos of
pretty
scantily
girls,
clad, yeah, attractive women.
And how is that a bad thing?
Well, Baidu's own
logging on right
that's
now.
That's right. Baidu's own, one of my colleagues has now made
HR specialist.
That's right.
So HR. What do they call it?
HR specialist.
HR specialist. Pyeolang Meme.
Yep.
Yeah. But anyway, I think it's a fantastic and it's. Great way, I think, to access Weibo if you don't read Chinese. Kind of gives you a certain sense of what people are talking about.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for any kind of, you know, data visualization anyway, so very cool. Jeremy, you got something?
Yeah, I'm going to plug my own stuff and toot my own horn, if you don't mind.
I don't.
I'm just putting the finishing touches on an article about serial killers in China that I'm going to publish by the time this podcast is live on dalmai.com. By Robert Foyle Hunwick. And it's about serial killers in China.
Oh, my God.
Including some stories from the 80s and various
I can't
people.
Think of a one. I mean, it's,
well,
it's,
there are
it's
quite
strange.
A few. And,
there was
I
a
mean,
kid in Yunnan.
It opens with a gang of four people who used to entice prostitutes to an apartment and then tie them up and beat them until they revealed their bank details. And then... kill them and grind them up in a meat grinder and dispose of the meat paste in restaurant garbage cans. And this gang was recently arrested.
Food. Yeah.
Well, this is China.
So I worried about that possible.
It's reminiscent. There was a movie about that. The New Dragon Gate Inn. Did you ever?
No.
Maggie Chung martial arts movie about where Maggie Chung runs an inn in the desert where she grinds up.
That's just eating Raoul, come on.
But with Maggie Chung, so right. How can you lose?
Much, much better.
There is a persistent urban myth in Beijing about the Baozi restaurant or the Daozi restaurant that makes human meat dumplings.
Right.
That's not myth. That's in my neighborhood.
Will, you got something for us this week?
Yeah, I'll tip Jonathan Mirsky's very short piece, Banned in China, in the New York Review of Books this week. Kaiser's making a gagging sound, and I know that there's some issues there. But nevertheless, regardless of what you think about Jonathan Mirsky, it touched on a topic which is of interest to me, which is what's happening with culture in China, domestic culture, and how that affects how society here is processing and recording some of the things that are happening to it. And I think whether or not you like or agree with Jonathan Mirsky,
actually that piece was totally unobjectionable to me.
I think that that's a very interesting topic, and I think it's very, very relevant in light of what's happening with the culture campaign in China right now.
It's called Banned in China, New York Review of Books, right?
Yeah, you can just search Banned in China, New York Review of Books on Google or the search engine of your choice. If you're here in China, I'm sure it'll come up.
It won't. I'll make sure it doesn't. Well, like I said, Josh scooped my recommendation for the week, and I can't come up with one off the top of my head. So folks, I think we're going to do one more show before the Chinese New Year, so we'll see you next week. Thanks very much, Josh Chin from The Wall Street Journal, Jeremy Goldcorn from Danway.com, and Will Moss, author of Image Thief. See you guys next time. Take care.